and welcome to Pondering Pauper. I'm Jacob, aka Cali Kais, or Satan Rakina on Magic Online. And today I have a special guest who has been just tearing up the Pauper challenges, Pauper leagues, and that is GN42. GN, welcome. How's it going, man?
It's going well. How are you doing?
Been pretty good today. It's a little gray out, but that's fine. I'll survive. been tooling around a lot with familiars, trying to find a list that I like, but that also is good. And you've been really doing really well with familiars lately. You had a huge heater, right? It was like you said 23-2.
I think so. Yeah, not including the challenge run. Yeah, I think it was 23-2 in the leagues, which was very lucky. I will definitely say it was very lucky. Yeah.
Well, luck or success is luck combined with skill, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So before we get really too far into your card choices and how you like to play familiar specifically, why don't you give us a rundown of your Magic the Gathering history, or maybe who you are and how you got into Pauper?
Yeah, so I'm GN. I started playing Magic, I don't know exactly. I think it was like around M10. Some family members gave me some stuff, and I played at the kitchen table for a number of years. And then I started playing actual competitive events around like Magic Origins, Battle for Zendikar. And then I played a bunch of draft. And then I played Standard, and I played Modern for a while. And then I got into Pauper around 2020. Well, I played some Pauper back in like 2016. Mm-hmm. I bought into the Flicker Drake Tron deck.
Wow.
And then it got banned within like a week after I bought it, so I was not the happiest camper there. And then I ended up, yeah, in 2021, I ended up moving to a new city, and there was like some local Pauper events, and I had played a bunch of Pauper on Magic Online starting at that point.
That's pretty sweet.
And yeah, just been loving it ever since.
It's nice there's local events that you can go to, but you don't usually go to like FNM. You're talking like actual like Winnebox or 1K type stuff.
Back in 2021, I had some friends who were doing like locals, so I ended up playing some locals with friends at that point. But yeah, these days I don't really play locals. I play in paper like probably 3 or 4 times a year only.
I think you get used to playing Magic Online, and it's just so convenient.
For sure, yeah.
So what was the first deck that you picked in Pauper after you got back into it, like aside from Drake? And then like how did you transition through the format to where you are now?
So in 2021 I started with Blue Black Fairies. I don't exactly know why I picked the deck. I think it was just like one of the most popular blue decks, and I like playing blue decks. And that deck was pretty strong. You know, playing like basically I started playing a little bit before Modern Horizons 2 came out, and then after Modern Horizons 2 came out, it was basically you were playing Fairies, Affinity, or Storm. And like realistically, you probably just should have been playing Storm.
Right.
But I had a good time. And then at some point, somebody, I forget what Discord it was, posted one of your videos that was like Blue Eye Familiars, like a how-to video, or I don't know exactly what it was. Maybe it was a challenge run or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yo, this deck's awesome. And so then I just picked up Familiars, and I messaged you on Discord, like, yo, how do I beat Tron? And you're like, oh, you should join the Familiars Discord. And then from then it just kind of jumped off into me playing a lot more Magic Online.
Nice. Yeah, I like to be pretty welcoming if anybody wants to join the Familiars Discord. And there's a lot of people there that have knowledge about how to pilot the deck and specific card choices. So there's a lot of like back and forth on things, which I think is pretty useful. As opposed to like people sometimes send me messages like DMs, like how do I sideboard? How do I do this? And I just always say like, let's bring it into the community. So that way at least more people get to see this communication.
Yeah, it's awesome. I really appreciate the work you've done there.
So, but you also played a lot of Cogate. Were you just playing Familiars and then Cogate got created by Zune and you just decided to just beat on people with 1/1s?
I'm trying to remember how exactly I swapped over to Cogate. I mean, I'm really the person to only play one deck unless I feel it's really broken. Mm. I don't know exactly how I got started playing Cogates, but yeah, I ended up getting some challenge results, and then I feel like the deck has always been relatively underplayed just because it's like the play patterns are fairly boring.
Yes. But when we discussed it, and if people are interested, I'll link it in the description. But we discussed Cogate in like a how-to video, and the things that you had to say about your sequencing and like just minor choices were pretty complicated. But playing Cogate, it's like it just seems so boring after you've played Familiars for sure.
It's very boring, yeah. But it's fun. I definitely feel like playing the long games where a lot of your small decisions matter is kind of what Popper's about for me. Mm-hmm. And so it sort of aligns with that.
Yeah, I like Familiars because you just get to take tons and tons of decisions. Every single thing is a decision, and you're just taking actions constantly. And I'm like a go big storm kind of player. Just throw a lot of spells around and make stuff happen. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure.
So you were playing Familiars for a long time. You also were part of the Turbo Initiative group. That was pretty fun, right?
Oh yeah, that was hilarious. That was definitely some of the most fun I had playing Popper, but it got pretty crazy because like at some point you would play a league and you know you would go 5-0 unless you got paired into the mirror. And then if you got paired into the mirror, you're like, oh no, it's just a coin flip. But yeah, that was a really fun like 2 weeks. I feel like most of the innovation was done by you and Jake.
Yeah.
But I definitely hopped on there and got some free wins while I could.
If people aren't familiar, basically Heterodox and Sweet from Japan had been playing in paper a lot, and they have really large paper events where initiative, turbo initiative style was really dominant. It was a blue-black fairies with Dark Ritual and Akira Sneak. Maybe just like 4 or 8 initiative. And then the first day it came out on Magic Online, we were playing that deck a lot, kind of Dark Ritualing things. And then a user, Jake Helms, he says, I wonder what would happen if I turn one initiative more often. So his deck just became like 12 to 16 fast mana spells and 12 initiative. And then we just started just steamrolling the format. And then I think that weekend, Simplify won the challenge with the same kind of style deck. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed because I thought his build was like not very good before he went into the challenge. And then he ended up streaming that challenge. And I feel like his build was like way better than ours. Like he made some really good innovations with the Crypt Rats and the Moldrifter. And so I thought it was super awesome to see that rewarded.
It's one of the most broken decks you could possibly have because it's all free interaction or like one mana interaction, and then you just slam stuff on the table and then basically hold the fort. And protecting the queen is, you know, a standard thing to be doing. There's like Delver decks and Terror decks, but when your queen gets you so much value and destroys your opponent, that's pretty impressive.
So right, and also your queen is immune to stuff out.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty good.
So lately, you've been playing mostly Familiars, but you kind of tool around and play good decks too and still do good with those. You want to talk about what your current build of Familiars is like? I had Adepto on a couple weeks ago, and he likes to play very minimal cantrips where he's swapped the 4 Preordains for Merchant Scrolls and Brainstorms, and then he's on Seed, Oracle, Meeting of Minds, and Murmuring Mystic. But I've always been kind of more of a proponent of the Modern Age once we figured out that was actually good just because of the amount of value that it gets you. And Deep Analysis just kind of like rolls people. But it's a little bit more of a slow plodding version of Familiars, I guess. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. My current list is similar to, I think it was last year, around March actually. Campo came out with a list with 3 Seagate Oracles and 3 Modern Ages, and he was main decking Sage's Rodenizen as a way to win quickly. But I ended up cutting that. But this is very similar to that list. I think the only real change is just the Lorien revealed. And then my counter split is a bit different. I'm playing 3 Prohibits and 1 Removal, which I guess I can talk about a little bit. But yeah, I feel like it's kind of crazy how the deck has very minimally changed in almost a full calendar year. And I feel like most of the other strong popper decks right now are crazy different than they were a year ago.
Yeah, that's true. I think that kind of shows the power of mana sheeting with the cost reducer and just like going over the top of people with Ephemerate. Just very strong.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that, yeah, I feel like Snap is by far the best card in the Familiars deck. Like, there are just some, I feel like most of the games where you open up on a Snap and your opponent is buying creatures, the game is just so much easier than it would be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about living the dream, and that actually happened to me in League where I, like, turn three, like, off Chancery and Island, Familiar, Snap, Drifter, Ephemerate, and just, like, I win.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I would say my goal with my Familiars deck is to just have my cards work as much of the time as possible. And so I don't prefer to play cards like Meeting of Minds or Murmuring Mystic, just because there's spots where they're completely dead.
Right.
And I think that like cards like Ephemerate and Ghostly Flicker, you kind of have to have in your deck, and those cards are going to naturally be dead sometimes just because of how the cards work. And so you already have a bunch of dead cards, so I don't want to really add more cards that can be dead half the time.
That makes sense.
Just to try to sort of maximize my consistency.
Yeah. So I guess for me, I'm trying to maximize my consistency in that the things I do, even though they're slightly clunky, are way better. But like, I feel that Counterspell is just better in Familiars because over something like Prohibit and Remove Soul in the main deck, just simply because Counterspell always does exactly what you want it to do. Whereas, and I think that with Gardens being highly popular lately, at least, and some sort of Monarch decks, that it's just, it makes more sense for me to not have to fight through that battle. I don't like losing to Gardens game one. I don't like the matchup.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, if you're going to play against Gardens, I don't know, like 20% of matches, then just main deck and Counterspell makes a lot of sense. But for me, I feel like when I play Counterspell and lose focus, like they definitely have their moments where they shine. Like if you get to counter an Avenging Hunter with your lose focus for one or two mana, that's great. But there's just so many times when I'm playing against like something that isn't, like if I'm paired into Burn and I have a Counterspell, it's really awkward because you want to fetch a Plains on turn one most games, and basically that pigeonholes you into not casting your Counterspell on turn two. And if you don't have another turn two play, like, it's really bad. So,
yeah, that's true. I just feel like that, I know people talked about not being able to play Counterspell early, but I don't think it's really an early game play. I think it's like a mid to late game play. And I don't think that we necessarily need Counterspells in the early game. One thing that people like to do is use Prohibit to go like turn three Familiar, hold Prohibit to counter something. And I had a game today where I was basically using Snap as my Prohibit while I had Counterspell on the deck. I think that's kind of okay. Obviously, tempo-wise, it's not great. Just because you're snapping your thing, you have to replay it again. But maybe that is another option, just using Snap as your like Prohibit style Counterspell. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely an option, but I don't know. In general, for the way I play, I generally am fine with my Familiars die. Like, I feel like if I'm playing against an interactive deck, I just play my Fam on turn two, and then if they kill it, they kill it, and if they don't, I probably win. But usually, yeah, when you are playing against an interactive deck, the draw spells are super good. And so if you're like interacting a bunch and then you slam Deep Analysis when both players are low on resources, it's really good. So,
yeah, can you talk a little bit about the trading resources thing? Because I know that's like a theme slash like main point about how to play Magic the Gathering, this trading resources. But it's very nebulous to me, and it's not something that I don't have a lot of like background knowledge in, and maybe not everybody else.
Yeah, so I've talked about this a couple times, but I think you basically just need to envision what your opponent's best response is to your play. So there's this very common play pattern in Pioneer where the Pioneer blue-white control deck has a bunch of counterspells for 2 and 3 mana, but they don't really have anything else on 2 or 3 mana. So let's say on turn 2, you're playing against blue-white control. This has changed recently with Deduce and some other cards, but and you have a spell, and they have 2 mana up for a No More Lies. You could play your spell and they would counter it and then untap, or you could not play your spell and they'd have no punish if you don't play your spell, right? Like they're just going to go to their turn, play another lane and pass again. But on the fourth turn, they can play draw spells on your end step. And so you want to start jamming. You can often, the play pattern against that deck is to wait until turn four to start jamming your stuff. And basically the idea is that you want to give them a hard decision, right? They either have to choose between countering your spell or playing their draw spell. And so you get some benefit out of that. So in familiars, let's say you're playing against, you know, like black, white, ephemerate or whatever. And they don't play snuff out, so they just have cast down. And on turn two, you play your familiar and pass. Then you have to give them a tough decision. Are they going to spend their entire second turn cast downing your familiar and passing? Or are they going to like actually develop their board? And usually that's a pretty tough decision for them. And so oftentimes, depending on what your opponent's playing, it's better to just play the familiar out, have it die, so that your opponent is spending their mana killing your stuff rather than developing their own game plan. Because oftentimes, you'll get put into a tough spot where you've held your familiar, your opponent has developed a huge board, and then when you play your familiar and pass and they kill it, then they then get to attack with for like 10 or something. That's really bad for you.
Right, that makes sense. Interesting.
I don't know if that was the greatest explanation, but yeah, oftentimes you just want to play your stuff out and force your opponent to interact with you because the punish for you not doing anything is really bad.
Right. So can you talk more about like the resource trading, like one for oneing into slamming a big draw spell? Like how does that work in Pauper and in Magic, in your opinion? Like, it still seems really ridiculous to me.
So I guess I would say, like, if you just count the number of resources that each player has in play, like, let's say we both have 10 resources combined. Let's say each card in hand, each land is a resource, each creature in play is a resource, right? Let's say we both have 10 resources, and I play a Divination, which puts me plus one, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Divination puts me up, what, like 10% resources more than my opponent. So, I mean, that's okay, but it's not great. Let's say we're playing Legacy Delvermeer, and we both have two lands in play and one card in hand, and I cast Expressive Iteration, which is a Divination, basically. That puts me up one resource, the same amount. But because we both have so few resources, I'm maybe gaining like if I only have three cards total, going up to a fourth card is what, a 25% increase in my overall resources relative to what you have. Basically, the more you exchange resources, the better draw spells get.
Oh wow, okay, this makes a lot of sense now. Yeah, I didn't know this before. This is good. It's good information. Huh?
Yeah, I mean that's just historically why card advantage is so broken in Delver. Is because you basically force the game to be a small game. I think this is like a Sam Black term, is like big games and small games. Like you basically just force your opponent to play a small game, and then these small two-for-ones are really powerful.
Oh, interesting. Is that why you focus so much on like prohibit and stuff like that, to keep it to be more of a small game versus like waiting a long time to like kind of take over later?
Well, it's kind of weird because in familiars, you want... In general, I'd say you want as many resources in play as possible. Like familiars prefers a big game, because like the more familiars you have in play, the better your mold drifters are. The more familiars you have in play, the more bounce lands you have in play, your snaps are better. So it's kind of, you're kind of tugged in both directions with the familiars deck specifically. But I would say that's part of the reason why that draw spells are so important in the like control mirrors, because everything else trades off, and then if you have a draw spell at the very end, then you're gonna win.
Right, and that's why Deep Analysis is like one of the best cards in the deck, is because it's minimum 2-for-1, especially in those cases, and sometimes you're 4-for-1-ing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you like to play the Meeting of Minds, or not Meeting of Minds, the Modern Age plus Seagate Oracle, and that's mostly just so you can get a little bit of extra value out of your flickers and make them dead cards less often?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. I found, I don't know, Seagate Oracle is definitely a pretty underpowered card. I would agree with you there. I think it just does just enough to have me want to play it in the deck.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I think that if familiars had a 2-mana Seagate Oracle, like if Seagate Oracle cost 2 mana, it would be like pretty broken. But I think that there's some issues with playing cards like Augur of Bolas. So unfortunately, we're stuck with Seagate Oracle.
Yeah, I think you can only play Augur of Bolas if you're on a lot of Brainstorm effects, and I don't think that that's very good in Familiars. But it might be, and I don't really know. I think you'd have to be on more like the Legacy version of a cantrip suite, where you're on like 4 Ponder, 4 Brainstorm, so you're always setting it up really well, and then you can convert your spells or into lands in hand by like putting them back on the top and then using the Augur. But the main problem with cards like Augur of Bolas or Phalagi Architect, whatever it is, Archaeologist, is just that Familiars needs to make every single land drop. And if you're using your cantrip creature to whiff on lands, it's really, really bad.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've tried the 4 Ponder, 4 Brainstorm before, but not with Augur of Bolas. So that's an option.
Yeah, well, at some point you start to run out of slots, so.
Yeah, you got to go Yorion.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, do you keep track of, like, how many challenge wins you've had? Or, like, good placements?
I was tracking at some point. I don't know. I would say I'm probably in, like, the low 30s of top 8s.
Oh, I thought you were going to say of wins, and I was going to, my mind was going to be blown. But that's...
No, I think I have, like... Well, I only have one challenge win in Pauper. I've split like 2 other challenges, but yeah, nothing crazy.
Wow. I mean, the challenge top 8 is just such a huge amount of value, like increase versus coming in 9th. It feels good to get those.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I am struggling a little bit to actually convert my top 8s, but I very much enjoy playing the challenges. So when I have time, if I don't have other obligations, I try to play one every weekend.
Nice. And you're in the West Coast US, so sometimes you just all-nighter it to do the Saturday?
Yeah, I was doing that a lot, like, last year. I've stopped doing it. I think I've only done it once so far this year. Hopefully I won't do it too much. It's really not the healthiest thing ever, but I do enjoy the challenges, so sometimes I do stay up until whatever it is, 2 or 3 a.m. to play the Saturday.
Yeah, I find that... throwing my sleep schedule off, and I'm older, so I feel like throwing my sleep schedule off just destroys me completely, and I just, for many days, it's not something that I could do again. Man. So, if it's okay, can you go over, like, what you thought was the thing that contributed to your 23-2 in the leagues? That's... Did you actually get 4 5-0s, or was it like 5-0, 5-0, 5-0, 4-1? How did that go?
So what, 23-2 is 5 leagues. So I think I got 3 5-0s at that throughout, right?
In like a day?
That's how that works.
2 days?
No, this is over a whole week. Okay. I played 5 leagues throughout the week, yeah. But I think that there's a few factors that contributed to that. The first one is that, like, the most popular decks, I think Familiars is pretty well set up to fight. And I feel like I've set up pretty good, like, sideboard mapping for decks like Blue-White Glitters, Mono-Red, and Gardens. Even though Gardens is not a good matchup, just having a plan is better than not having a plan.
Yeah.
And then also I would say that in leagues, like, leagues are significantly softer than challenges, and so people aren't always making the best decisions. And so just playing a good deck and, you know, trying to think about your plays will net you a decent amount of just free wins.
So some of the things that you've chosen to do in your deck versus the way that I'm playing, you're on 20 lands versus 19. And then I've been on 3 Lorien Revealed a lot. You're on just 2. We talked about the counter suite. Other than that, it's pretty much the same. So what made you want to go to 20 lands and cut and like go just a 2 Lorien Revealed? Do you count Lorien Revealed as half a land, or do you just feel like cycling Lorien Revealed for a land is like just not worth it?
I could probably talk for like half an hour on the mana base, but I will not do that. I think that there's a lot of things at play. The one thing is that every land you cut gets progressively worse. So because of Azorius Chancery and Ashbrands needing other lands to function. So if you go from 21 to 20 lands, there is a cost, but then going from 20 to 19 lands is an even bigger cost than going from 21 to 20 lands. Just because, yeah, Lord Intervale, Azorius, Chancery, and Axebrands all require you to have another land to do anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just value making my land drops, and so I feel like 20 lands is roughly the correct number. The one thing that I'm not a huge fan of is the Glacial Floodplain.
Yeah,
I feel like you kind of have to play it if you have Lorien Revealed in your deck. But it's really awkward with Azorius Chancery. And before Lorien Revealed, I would see people playing the life game land. I forget what it's called. That didn't.
Yeah, it's the white blue like ETB gain a life.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. But I would see people playing that card, and that make like zero sense to me, because if you open on a tap land and an Azorius Chancery, it's really, really bad for
your early tempo.
Your tempo, yeah. And also, it's not... If you compare Glacial Floodplain to Ashbarrens when you are trying to cast Dust to Dust, it's like a world of difference. Because, like, let's say your opening hand is Azorius Chancery, Island... Or let's say your hand is Glacial Floodplain, Azorius Chancery, and Dust to Dust. You can't cast Dust to Dust on turn 3 unless you have a snap. Which is a pretty big disaster in a lot of games.
Right.
And so I think that if Grixis Affinity was the most popular deck, we would actually have to kind of look at the mana base a little bit again. The difference between Grixis Affinity and the current Blue-White Affinity is that the Blue-White Affinity deck just plays out creatures, and so you always have a snap target, which lets you fix your mana, whereas the Grixis Affinity deck, that like they're just not going to play out their creatures. So you don't have a way to fix your mana for Dust on turn 3 as well, as easily.
Right. So how are you... What was the run that you were doing? Do you remember, like, you hit a lot of the same deck, or you just feel like you're pretty good against the most played decks right now, and you have a good plan? You just ran hot.
Trying to think. I don't know. I think it was a mix of different things. I think my losses were... Like, one loss was to Dredge, which I was very sad about, because I think that matchup was pretty good. And the other loss was the Blue-Red Terror. Yeah. I feel like the leagues are pretty diverse. Like, I feel like solidly 20% of the metagame is going to be like some Glitters variant, and then maybe like another 10% is going to be Gardens, and then like another 10% is going to be like Blue Control decks. And then from there, or maybe like Mono Red is 10%, and then it sort of tapers off from there.
What percent of the metagame do you think is on 8 Inspectors? Do you think it's like 50%? Because almost every like wacky brew is an 8 Inspector or Skyfisher Glenhawk deck, I feel.
I have no idea. I feel like when I get paired into a core Skyfisher deck, I just get a free win, so I don't really think about that too hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like the thing... Oh, God.
Well, I was just going to say, Familiars kind of eats up mid-range in general. There are things that they can do, but... A lot of mid-range is like one for wanting an incremental value, and then you slam a Lorien Revealed and they die.
Yeah. I feel like the most important thing, for me at least, is just having good sideboard plans against the top decks. So, like,
do you think get into your sideboard plans for... I pulled up your recent challenge deck, and I can link that. But if you could maybe talk about how you want to sideboard versus like the top four in your...
I think that I'm fine sharing my plans, but I will say that like the current plans that I had for last week might get outdated slightly, just because like if next week they're all playing Turnicides, like if all the blank glitters put 4 Turnicides in their deck, then my sideboard plan is gonna have to change.
You think that you I'm fine to, sharing my my plans, but... or something? I mean, you don't have to share all of them.
I have no idea. I have to think about that. But the thing about Turnicide and these like reactive cards is that they're bad against fams just doing the fam thing. So if my opponent has 2 Turnicides in their hand and I just go Drifter Ephemerate, like that's kind of, I just kind of win that game. But if they have Turnicides in my hand and I spend turn 3 and turn 4 tapping out for Dust to Dust, then they're probably going to win that game. So I don't know. It's kind of a complex issue there.
Yeah. I think that Dust to Dust is probably still worth it because it just does so much versus them. If you can actually resolve it, like your plan is not always to take out their lands because that's not necessarily going to work. But if you can get rid of the Mirror Enforcers and the Ginger Brutes, then you're probably going to be able to survive and then get to the late game and then start actually winning with Dust to Dust. And sometimes you just turn 3 Dust to Dust or 2 lands and they lose.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, can you describe what you think the important cards are in the matchup for your list specifically against blue-white familiars in the main deck and the sideboard?
The important cards against blue-white glitters, you mean? Yeah, so I generally bring in the Destroy Evils, the Dust to Dust, the Nature's Chant, and the two negates. I find that negate is better than prohibit against
Metallic Rebuke.
Metallic Rebuke. And like prohibit doesn't actually hit Mirror Enforcer, so and neither does negate, so it's kind of a wash there.
Yeah, I would like
And
to
then I end
play
up.
negates, but I'm afraid of gardens so much that I like to have five anti-initiative counters. And I see that you're only really on three of those. Do you feel like it's, or well, I guess four, because you have remove soul and exclude. Do you feel like four is enough? How do you make that decision? You just want to like spread your.
I definitely feel like you kind of have to get lucky to beat Gardens with this setup. Like, if you knew Gardens was going to be a large percentage of the metagame, then 100% you should be loading up on excludes and counter spells and stuff. But I feel like Prohibit being able to counter Crypt Rats sometimes is good enough. But yeah, I mean, things certainly have to break your way to beat them. But I think that's okay. You can't beat everything.
I don't like that plan. I must beat
Yeah.
everything. It's the only way.
So then the cards I slide out versus blue-white, I slide out the Flicker, I slide out Deep Analysis, I slide out all the counters usually from the main deck. And then from there, it's like I usually set out a Mold Drifter on the draw, and then like a Faithful on the play. It also depends on exactly what I expect them to be doing, like, but that's a rough estimate of what I usually do.
So then, do you even see, like, I was going to talk about mono red next, but interestingly, we've seen mono red like completely tank in response to the blue white glitters deck. And I don't know if specifically that's because most mono red players are playing blue red or blue white now, but I also think that the mono red deck as it stands is not super good against the blue white deck or all the Aid Inspector decks that are in the format. Turns out that if you have a lot of Thraven Inspectors, it's actually pretty good at bricking people. Wasn't very good
Yeah.
against Swift Spear, but it's at like four or five Inspectors on the table, it's pretty good against a Kuldotha Rebirth.
Yeah, it's pretty wild how creature sizing in Pauper matters a lot more than it does in other formats. Like, just having a 1/2 against your opponent's 1/1 is like super good in Pauper.
So, is that why you're down to three hydros then? Just because it's not really around? Or do you think it's not that threatening?
I think the deck is pretty solid. I actually lost to it last night with this build, which was kind of fun. But I would say that if you want to respect the deck more, you can play Prismatic Strands. I think Prismatic Strands is really good against the current version of Mono Red, because they're all in on Bushwhacker. I think like 80% of the times I lose to that deck is just because they have a fast Kuldotha into Bushwhacker, and then they're not really running Flaming Pain, so that's pretty nice. But for the current configuration, yeah, I have three hydros, and then I'll bring in maybe a negate or two, and then I'll usually I used to trim on snaps against the red deck when they had Swift Spear, but I think that that is not correct anymore because the deck is significantly less resilient because they're only playing four divinations as opposed to 12.
Four
So usually
less. Oh, well, yeah.
I usually trim like Ghostly Flicker, Deep Analysis, maybe a Modern Age, and then a Remove Soul or and maybe like a Mold Drifter, somewhere around there. But the worst cards for sure are Ghostly Flicker and Deep Analysis, I would say, and a Remove Soul.
Interesting. I usually trim on an Ephemerate just because I don't have good targets, but Ephemerate on Seagate Oracle or saving your creature is probably pretty good. You've got the Seagate
Do
Oracles to
you
block with.
keep the Flicker in? I'm curious.
I almost always keep the Flicker in. I don't think there's any matchup where I cut Flicker. I know that Zimplify
Really?
was cutting Flicker before, but I just feel like the option to have infinite life or infinite every like whenever you can actually go infinite, I feel like it's worth it.
Yeah, I feel like I end up using Ephemerate as like Vines of Asphodel a lot, and not being able to do that with Ghostly Flicker is a bit different.
I don't know. I mean, I played familiars before Ephemerate existed, so I'm probably just too afraid to cut it. I could see that being the case.
I don't know. It's a solid card. It also gains you life with the Faithfuls, so it's kind of an interesting call there.
Just like having blue spells in the deck, especially when Faithfuls are good. As many blue spells as possible, really, for me.
Gotcha.
So, if you're playing against Gardens, are you just like trimming on Faithfuls and Clerics for remove souls and excludes?
Pretty much. I usually bring in the remove souls, the excludes, the deep analysis, the negates, and one destroy evil. And then I'm trimming on. I actually considered boarding up to 61, just because the deck resources end up mattering. But I think it's just incorrect because of how important it is to draw a creature counterspell. So I usually go like minus two snap. Oh, my headphone fell out. Minus two snap, minus two faithful. Trim the Dawnbringer cleric. And then from there, you can bring out like another Faithful or a Modern Age or a Seagate Oracle, I'd say. Something like that.
Yeah. It's an interesting matchup because generally you're just trying to make land drops as much as possible and blank all their removal. But then at some point, they're going to slam something and you have to determine whether or not it's counter. You can counter it. Obviously, like the main problem for us is for familiars. Is the initiative, so if that can just never resolve, that's the biggest. And then once you're kind of create a board, you get to this turning point, which it's hard to define, but at some point you're like, okay, now I only care about Crypt Rats, and then you just focus on that really hard. It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if their deck was just removal spells, you would just win. Crush them, right? Because all your creatures draw cards. But yeah.
And that's the difference between the mono black Gardens deck versus like the black green, where it actually has a huge clock with the Venging Hunter.
Yeah, the one thing that's interesting to me is that the initiative is sort of like the Monarch in that it just accrues advantage as the game goes, but it also kills you, so they don't have to put any other win conditions in their deck, really, which is really powerful.
Yeah, we talked about it when initiative was a thing, or like the Turbo initiative, in that Monarch. It gives you another card, but you have to spend mana to use it. And initiative gives you very specific cards, basically, theoretical cards, like a 4/1 skeleton or whatever. But you don't have to spend any mana to use it. And that is extremely powerful.
Right. I'm more discussing, like, it used to be the mono black control list would have to play, like, Gurmag Angler or,
right, true.
You know, Gary or something to actually win the game. And those cards are pretty stinky on their own, so.
You talk about the negative five life and the +2/+2, and then making a giant beater come out of your deck out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are strong. Man. Every time that they hit the final part of the dungeon, I'm just like, I really hope they don't flip Crypt Rats this time. Then they do and I die. But you knew you were dead already, so I'd have just scooped.
Yeah, most of the time.
Let's see. Is there any? What do you think is like the next like biggest part of the meta?
The next biggest part of the meta behind Gardens and Blue White and Mono Red.
Like Terror.
I don't know. From there, maybe Terror. I feel like Terror has fallen off a bit because they struggle against the Blue White decks. But sure, I can go over what I do against Terror. Against Terror, I bring in the Deep Analysis, the two Negates, and the two Destroy Evils, and then I board out. Let's assume we're on blue. I guess blue black Terror. I usually board out like Remove Soul, Prohibit,
right.
Dawnbringer Cleric, and like maybe a Faithful. I'd say.
What was your experience playing Circle of Protection? Did you try that out at all?
Yeah, Circle of Protection blue is, I think, a pretty reasonable card to have in your sideboard. The reason I like Destroy Evil is that it comes in against like a bunch of different matchups.
Yeah.
And Circle Protection only comes in against one, so.
I just feel like, once again, the same reason I play Counterspell is because I want a strict answer versus having to navigate the game. It's easier when you just win, so that's why I put that in.
Yeah, well, if you can predict exactly what you're going to play against, then Circle Protection is much better than Destroy Evil. It's not even a question. But people tend to bring a lot of random nonsense, so I'd like to be prepared for that.
True. And then you have more ways to answer stuff like randomly meeting its boggles or something.
Yeah.
Cool. And then So you had a third place in a challenge. Does anything stand out from that run?
Sure. I mean, I can go over the matchups. I think that the Swiss matchups were fairly easy and like fairly lucky. So I played against the Mirror, which I basically just won the coin flip. That matchup is not the most interesting. It just comes down to who can get their engine going first.
Right.
And then the second round was against Madness, which I'd actually be interested to hear your opinion here. Do you bring in Dust to Dust against the current Madness deck or no?
I pretty much only bring in Dust to Dust versus Blue-White or versus an Affinity deck. I think it's pretty bad against any other deck unless they're on like a very large amount of artifact lands plus a very large amount of relics. Because at that point, there's a lot of good targets. But otherwise, I usually don't bring it in.
Okay.
I just feel like you just like kind of overwhelm the red-black Madness anyway. I don't think it's that bad of a matchup.
Yeah, I think it's pretty favorable. But I looked at their deck, and I think they're running like upwards of 10 artifact lands. And also, their deck is extremely mana-hungry. Like, if you picture their average turn is like, you know, cast Vampire's Kiss and then activate a blood to like, you know, put some creature into play, which is that right there is 4 mana. And their land count is pretty low. But I think it might be okay to bring in one or two Dust to Dust because they're more mid-rangey, but I don't know. It's probably not that great.
Dust to Dust is another thing where it's like, if you're bringing in one, then what does it really do for you? But sometimes I bring in Dust to Dust if I see like a lot of artifact lands and a lot of relics as my one of answer to relic, because then I get a little bit more value out of it, as opposed to bringing in the Nature's Chant specifically.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right. The third match was White Weenie against J-Waves. I lost game one. That matchup basically comes down to if they have the 3-power creature on turn two. I forget the name of the creature that loots.
And you don't have a Faithful.
Right. And then also they have to have a pump spell in the first like five turns. And then the post-board matches were pretty easy, or the post-board games were pretty easy. And then round five and six were both against Glitters. Notably, there was a sideboard guide put out on Twitter that says to take out the Mirror Enforcers against Familiars. And I would caution anybody playing Blue-White Glitters to not take out their Mirror Enforcers versus Blue-White Familiars, because that is one of your best cards, because I can't block it.
Did they both take out Mirror Enforcers? Easy. You saw no Mirror Enforcers post-board in either?
Yep, that's correct.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's pretty lucky.
Yeah. And then the seventh round I scooped because I was 6-0. And then in the quarterfinals, I played against Hydra Stone, is I believe the Magic Online tag on Gardens. And I lost game one pretty easily. I just didn't draw enough counters. And then in games two and three, I basically just drew all my creature counters. And then, like, a lot of times if you just draw one creature counter or two, it's enough, because if you hold up Remove Soul, they go for a Guardian, or not a Guardian,
an Avenging Hunter.
You counter it, then you can untap and play an Archaeomancer and pick up the Remove Soul. And because it was just their turn five, if you're on the play, then it's your turn six. You can go Archaeomancer plus hold up the Remove Soul for another Avenging Hunter.
Right.
And so that ends up working out. And that's kind of why I play a split of Remove Soul and Exclude, is for that sequequence.
Yeah,
because that worked out. There's also,
it's like, obviously at 3 mana, it's a lot more difficult to find a spot. But it's also really nice to have a 2-for-1 against their big mana creature.
Right. I'm just talking about specifically the sequence where they go for turn 5 or turn 6 initiative. If you're on the play against turn 5 or on the draw against turn 6, you can play an Archaeomancer and pick up the Remove Soul that you just used and hold it up again.
Right.
Whereas with Exclude, you can't do that because it's one more mana. And then in the semifinals, I lost against Tyrube on Cycle Storm, and those matches were not even slightly close. I think I mulliganed to 4 in game 1, and then in game 2, I drew my Dawnbringer Cleric, but it didn't matter. So,
yeah, unfortunately for Familiar, Cycle Storm is basically impossible. So we have no mass graveyard hate, and they literally don't have to do anything, and they can just wait until they have infinite waste around what you're doing to just win the game. But they don't have to go fast, and they just like make land drops and cycle. Then eventually you have 2 counters in play and they have 6 pieces of combo, so they just win.
Exactly, yeah.
Some people have talked about trying to sideboard mainboard one of Bajookabog, which I feel like is a mistake. What are your thoughts on that? After playing Cycle Storm, do you want to put a Bajuka Bog in your deck?
Definitely not. I think that, yeah, you're going to run into Cycle Storm maybe one out of like 200 matches or something. Maybe one out of 100 matches. And so it's just not worth. Not only do you have to play against Cycle Storm, which is super rare, you also have to draw it against Cycle Storm within the first like four turns. Because it'll just kill you on turn four. Yeah.
And you also have to play it at a moment that it matters. They can play around it, so.
Yeah, for sure.
It's different in Tron, where you have crop rotation for it. And I think that that obviously makes sense there. But there's no way to just tutor it up here. I mean, I don't see
much less an instant speed.
Like, splashing green for crop rotation so you can play a Bajuka Bog.
Right. Well, also, they can tutor their flickers, which makes the bog stronger as well.
True. Maybe we should be on five color Tron familiars. It's too much fun. Man. It's a timeout waiting to happen on Magic Online, though. Can't really do that.
Yeah, that the infinite mana combo in that deck is extremely time consuming.
Well, yeah, even with the cost reduction, it's really time consuming. You're just clicking through Energy Refractor and stuff. What are your thoughts on the limitations of familiars and Magic Online decks based on the interface?
So maybe this is a controversial opinion. I think familiars is significantly easier to play on Magic Online than it is on paper.
That's my opinion as well.
I wonder if this is just an experience thing, but I think that, I mean, your videos definitely helped me a lot. Just setting up the interface in, like, setting up all the menus in the correct positions makes things so much faster. And then just getting good muscle memory for where all of the triggers are flying around, where in the graveyard you have to click.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I remember you mentioned in one of your videos that you want to click on the top card first. Like, when you flicker to get two things back from your graveyard, you want to click on the top card first and then the bottom card because the card sort of gets bigger after you click on it. And that has probably saved me, like, so much time. It's ridiculous. But, yeah.
Wow. Plus, it also, I mean, you can misclick if you click the top card first, because sometimes you double click the front card and it's just so ugh.
Yeah, and then you lose your thing. Yeah. I definitely think, though, in both paper and on Magic Online, if you are cognizant of the time and you put in some effort to think about your decisions before your turn. Like, if your opponent's taking their turn, you can think, okay, if I draw a snap, this is my line. If I draw nothing, this is my line. Definitely helps a lot. And I think that anybody, if you just put in some thoughtful practice, you can not have any issues with the clock.
I feel like it was really difficult for me to complete games in time and paper just because I'm not used to seeing everything the same way. And I missed sideboarded during my last event because I couldn't see my whole deck during sideboarding. Just I didn't like couldn't full picture it. And I think you definitely need a lot of practice. Plus paying attention to the clock and knowing like how long games are. But I feel like in paper, actually completing a match is somewhat difficult because you're sort of at the mercy of how fast your opponent is playing. So you could be playing like hyper speed and your opponent could just still think about the decisions and you time out.
Right. One thing that I don't think is discussed enough in this conversation is that in paper, like let's say you go to 50 minutes in paper and what is it, 45 minutes online, or is it 50 minutes online as well? It is, yeah.
Yeah, 50.
So in paper, you're like, let's say you get to the table within like 2 minutes of the round starting, like that's just 2 minutes off the clock immediately. And then also your sideboarding time in paper counts towards the clock time. Whereas on Magic Online, your sideboarding time doesn't count towards the clock time.
And every shuffle and everything.
Yep. Yeah. So I definitely prefer playing on Magic Online for that reason, just because I feel like I'm at my own. It's sort of my fault if I time out more on Magic Online compared to in paper.
Right. But there are combo decks that are very difficult to play on Magic Online, like Alter or just weird, like walls and stuff can be hard for people. Goblin combo can be hard for people.
Yeah, I started playing Amulet Titan in Modern. And if you resolve a Cultivator Colossus, like let's say you have three amulets in play and you resolve a Cultivator Colossus.
It's impossible.
There's like 60 triggers you put onto the stack And in paper, that's easy because you just say, okay, I'll put all my lands in play, untap them three times, make 50 mana or whatever. But on Magic Online, you could spend there 10 minutes like clicking all these triggers and put them onto the stack. Oh, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I really like how big that deck goes. And I played some of the Timeless Amulet once with Cultivator Colossus, and I just remember like it was like 4 minutes clicking through triggers. So bad.
Yeah, it's wild.
So there's pluses and minuses. I think that if the deck is like super broken and good, it's probably going to be played in both, unless it literally takes like the Tron Weatherstorm Unwind combo is actually not viable on Magic Online, simply because you literally cannot make that many clicks. Whereas in paper, yeah. Adeptoterra, I think he came in second or won a Hoppergeddon with the Unwind Rolling Thunder U combo.
Yeah, there was one. I was playing the Fam's Tron deck, which the infinite combo frequently. This was like a year ago. Like, the infinite combo is you have to flicker a tower and a wall.
To make one, to make half a mana.
Make half a mana, right? So I had to use the infinite mana to deck my opponent out. Oh, but God. They had four snuff out in their deck. So I had to like deck them out and have mana to counter all four of their snuff outs on my walls. And no. It literally took me 20 minutes to execute the kill, which was ridiculous. Yeah.
So that's partially why I'm like so specific about things on the interface, just because I've had that experience before. With Mystic Sanctuary familiars, I think you're probably aware of this, but you could flicker Seagate Oracle, go through your entire deck, find your Moldrifter, and then flip. Once you had that, you had to flicker through your entire deck again to get back to the Moldrifter and then stack the cards differently so that you could draw the Moldrifter and then draw your deck again with the Moldrifter until you got to your Sage Drone Denison and then mill your opponent with that. So it was like four loops of your deck or something. And that took a lot of time. It was like a 15, 16 minute loop if you didn't mess up. Because one time I looped through my whole deck and then stacked it wrong.
Oh, like, no.
I concede.
That's insane.
Oh, another thing I actually learned lately, for people that are playing on Magic Online and using Windows 10, Windows Defender is a huge resource hog. So if you don't have a lot of RAM and your computer is running slowly, you could consider getting more RAM or turning off the real-time scanning for Windows Defender, or maybe like installing Bitdefender free because it's very lightweight. That's been a huge help for me. Just Windows Defender and Virus Scan like really, really chugs your computer with large files. And it seems like Magic Online dumps huge, huge files with like the log files and triggers and stuff. So that's one thing to help people get through. I don't know if that matters for you though.
Sweet. No, I haven't had too many problems with lag.
I got to upgrade my RAM on my laptop though, I think. I'm trying to do too much stuff.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about familiars, which was fun. I think people probably got some good tips. So before we close out, if you have any thing you wanted to bring up about the popper or the metagame or familiars, and then let's also hear what your favorite card of all time is.
Let's think. As far as the popper metagame, I'll be interested to see what exactly happens. It seems like at the current point in time, the blue-white glitter stack is kind of just cracking everything. But I kind of believe in my heart of hearts that the deck isn't actually that good and that people can adapt to it and beat it. But I'm willing to be wrong. Like, I could totally just be wrong and maybe it'll get banned in a month and I'll look like an idiot. But I don't know. We'll see what happens, I suppose.
It was just really strange to see, okay, now we got another dinky creature and all of a sudden the deck is busted. It's like, what? It's the exact same thing that happened with the Swift Spear deck. I was complaining about Swift Spear. I was complaining about Glitters. Everyone knows this. Then all of a sudden they got one more dinky creature and it's just broken. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
As far as my favorite card of all time, I kind of want to say Expressive Iteration because that is the card that's probably brought me the most wins outside of Popper. As far as like designs though, I think Doomsday is a really cool design. It's very like thematic and very fun to play with to puzzle out how you win with that card.
Yeah, the Doomsday deck is known to be a mind melting deck where you have to be able to play around everything. Pretty interesting. Can you go over what Doomsday is for people that haven't heard of it? Or the popper players?
Yeah, so Doomsday is black, for a sorcery that, I'm just going to summarize, I don't remember the Oracle text off the top of my head. Basically, it says you exile you search your deck for 5 cards, or your graveyard for 5 cards. That becomes your deck, and then your deck and graveyard gets exiled. So it's basically just 5 Vampiric Tutors, and then you also lose half your life rounded up. And so you can play this in either Legacy or Vintage, and then commonly you will cast Thassa's Oracle. You make some pile with 4 cards and the Thassa's Oracle, and you'll be able to win the game. But the thing that makes that card so puzzly is that oftentimes you'll have to play around your opponents having some sort of interaction. So in Vintage, if you think your opponent has a Dress Down, maybe you'll put Tongue Walk in the pile. In Legacy, if you think your opponent has an Endurance, maybe you'll play Relic of Progenitus to exile your graveyard in response to the Endurance. And so you sort of have to puzzle out what exactly your opponent has and then try to build a pile to beat that, which is extremely skill intensive and extremely rewarding. I'm not very good at it myself, but it's really cool.
Yeah. It sounds like something that you'd have to have a lot of format knowledge to be able to play well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
I don't think so. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. If anybody wants to check out the videos that you put out, you have a Twitch and a YouTube. Sometimes the YouTube is Twitch videos, right? And Twitter, and also on the Familiars Discord.
Yep. Yeah. If you go to my YouTube, everything is linked there. I think it's like GN. If you just type in GNMTG on Twitter or sorry, on YouTube, you'll find all my links through that.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm on Twitter at JakeALS and then CaliKai's on YouTube and on Discord. And then we'll link the Familiars Discord if you guys anybody wants to hop in. And that'll be it for us, I think. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yep, thanks. Have a good one.
I'll see everybody next time.